the more education you have and the better relationship you have with that sponsor, you can feel free to ask those questions and get a response. So, and the more you educate yourself, right, you're going to have more intelligent questions asked.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Randy is president of InvestArc Properties, focusing on creating investor value and passive income returns for the busy professional. He has been in multifamily real estate since 2014 as both a general partner and key principal in 250 doors and a limited partner in over 4,000 doors. InvestArc offers the busy professional who wants to include multifamily in their portfolio an opportunity to partner with experts who are aligned with their investment goals. Randy, welcome to the show.
Sam, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
Hey, the pleasure's all mine. Where are you based out of today?
Sam, Randy Langendorfer. I'm from the Houston, Texas submarket, a southwest corner Sugar Land area, if anybody's familiar with the Houston market, and have been here for about eight and a half years, transplant from the great state of Ohio, specifically the Cleveland, Ohio submarket.
Man, you could you have picked more diametrically opposed climates and weathers on a year-round basis?
So all my friends in Houston say, you got to be glad to be out of Houston and be out of Cleveland. And I said, well, I don't miss the snow, but you got to understand the people in the north look at the heat as equally as bad as the people in the south look at the snow.
You're right.
They're just opposites is all I say. But we love them both. Love the winters in the south. Love the winters in the south. I don't miss snow at all, but I also have not gotten used to the humidity in Houston yet either. So,
and you never will. No. I don't think you will. So, well, that's awesome, man. Randy, appreciate you taking the time to jump on the show today. If you don't mind, just give our listeners a quick overview of where you started, where you are now, and how you got there.
Yeah, happy to do so, Sam. And thanks again. So, Randy Langendorfer started in this journey really in about 2010, 2011. Brother-in-law came to me who was an exec for what's now Pittsburgh National Bank in Cleveland, Ohio. He was a displaced exec, and he had gone to a house flipping school and told me he wanted me to join him flipping houses as a hard money lender. Oh. So I got into it as a hard money lender and was very skeptical. I'm a finance MBA guy at heart and a corporate risk guy in my day job in Houston. And so I was very reluctant, but gained a lot of comfort in it, started investing passively in single family in terms of a hard money lender, moved to Houston for business. And I found multifamily at a lifestyles event here in Houston and attended their weekend retreat and heard single family on Saturday and multifamily on Sunday. And I never really looked back after that, after I heard multifamily, because for my business model, it's just a whole lot better. It's a lot less work. The returns are better. Whether you're a passive or an active, I think it's better for me anyhow. So, I said I got started in the Lifestyles Group very shortly. I transitioned to the Brad Summerock's group in Dallas for about 3 years. And that's where I really learned the underwriting process and learned the team building and the networking there and got my first active or my first, I'd done several passives during that time period and then got my first active in about, I think it was January of 18, I guess it was exactly. And was involved in that. And we sold that in the end of 19 and was able to make a very handsome return, 1.95 equity multiplier in 21 months. And trying to repeat that, been really active underwriting today and partnered with people to find more for sale, to buy and syndicate. And I'm currently in Rod Khalif's mastermind and a coach in his organization as well. So I really enjoy talking to the passive investors and the new people about multifamily and real estate in general.
That's fascinating. So let me see if I can wrap my head around this. You are in a GP in 250 doors, but a limited partner in 4,000 doors. That's usually the other way around.
I want to be a 4,000 GP guy. I'm actively employed yet, so I'm still got a W-2 job. I do both.
Gotcha. So as an LP side, you've just taken that you are just you as Randy are a yeah. partner. You're not doing fund to funds into, you know, those 4,000 doors. It is Randy is a limited partner in 4,000 doors.
That is correct.
Wow. Okay. Very cool.
11 or 12 different deals over the time period. Probably 20 now, and about 7 of them gone full cycle. So, yeah.
Right.
That is Randy using his own money and a self-directed IRA.
Right. I love that. That's great. That is great. Talk to us about that process. Maybe give us, you know, without details, but give us some high level. What have been some things as a limited partner that you've seen gone right? And what have been some things you've seen gone wrong?
I don't know if I can cover all that. That's a mouthful, but we'll give it a shot. So I think as a limited partner, you know, the first things, Sam, and I'm sure you relate to, is on your journey of getting to know deals. And so I always encourage passive investors to really seek out sponsors and interview them and understand their model, because everybody's different. There's people doing deep value adds. There's people doing value adds, people doing yield plays, people focusing on a market or a submarket. You know, there's a lot of people that I'll say in lifestyles here that focus in the Houston market. A lot of people in the Sumrock group that focus on the Dallas market. I found other GPs that focus in the Carolinas and those, and there's nothing wrong with any of those areas. But so I really try to encourage passive investors to develop their own strategy. What is it they want out of, you know, multifamily or real estate investing? And I don't think until you really kind of define what you want that you don't really know. But I have people say, well, Randy, I don't know what I want. So I encourage them. The first part of that is really education. You got to get involved. There's these large national educational arms such as Lifestyles, Khalif Today, others, Jake and Gino, Dan Hanford's got a group, and there's Mark Kenny's got a group out of Dallas. There's many of them. They all have great value, but you don't even have to start there. I mean, the passive investor can just start with meetups, your podcast. There's so much more material out there today, even than when I started 8 years ago, about how the do's and don'ts. And you're associating with people at the meetups and those networking events that want to do the same things you want to do. So you're jumpstarting your process by involving yourself in those educations. But so that's how I started. I went to the Sumrock group. I started meeting deal sponsors. I found deals. I found people that I know, liked, and trust. And after my hand stopped shaking from writing that first check, you know, I've done many since, but you find what it is you really like and those that you don't really prefer, right? So there's people I've invested in that I never invest with again. And then there's ones that I don't even look at the properties much anymore. I just sign the check. So it's just who you gain comfort with. But, you know, for your listeners, it's all about education. It's all about networking, understanding the business risk, as I say. Trees don't always grow to the sky. This market isn't going to always be on an upward trajectory at 90 degrees, but it can be very profitable.
Talk to us about that. I mean, that's obviously a hot button topic right now, is where are we? Of course, we've been asking that question for a long time. Where are we in the market cycle? And I don't even know if there is a market cycle anymore, just with all the money we've been printing. Are we just in no man's land? But aside from what I think, tell me what you see as a limited partner and on the risk side, and what risk do you see, and then how do you potentially mitigate those?
So I think as a GP, when I'm out looking at deals today, you know, we're every buyer beware, every underwriter, every syndicator will say we, you know, air quotes, underwrite very conservatively. I've never heard a syndicator say we underwrite very aggressively. But one man's conservative is another man's aggressive, and vice versa, depending on what you're back to, what's your business plan. So I truly think that we're, you know, some of the things we're trying to do is we underwrite today. We're looking at bridge financing is very popular just because it is. It's a better interest rate. It gets you out. There's no prepayment penalty. But, you know, looking at reversion cap rates and what's the expense and income ratios? You know, really, if you underwrite, if you write things today the way you did 5 years ago, you're probably never going to get a deal because the process has changed. Payroll is going to go up. To your point of the world has changed. I heard Neil Bawa say Neil Bawa is another great podcast author. I heard him say in a recent podcast that of all the money in circulation today, 40% of it was printed in the last 12 months. And that's just mind boggling. So there's going to be inflation. So these assets are going to appreciate over the next 3 to 5 years. And I think that you can mitigate that risk by just getting really becoming an operator, focused on operations, streamlining operations really for your investors' benefit. You know, what makes a good operator? Somebody really focused on the details. Having a property management company that's really got key performance indicators. And I really think the risk in the next 5+ years is going to be operations focused. Because money is plentiful. but continuing to build your NOI and focusing on operations to do so is going to be the challenge.
What are some things that you have seen as a passive investor that were operationally deficient?
Well, on the vein of, I've had one where the property manager committed fraud as a passive investor. Mm-hmm. You don't find out about it until a lot later. Property manager committed fraud, you know, where there were bad things happening, but that's an extreme case. But I think as a passive investor, I really encourage the students I talked to be an active passive investor. So ask the sponsor questions. Don't be a nuisance, but send him or her an email periodically and just ask, you know, you said rents were up or why aren't they? Or your business model said this, where are we in that? Challenge some of the expenses and keep them honest. So I think as a passive, the more education you have and the better relationship you have with that sponsor, you can feel free to ask those questions and get a response. So, and the more you educate yourself, right, you're going to have more intelligent questions asked. But I don't think any sponsor or anybody wants to hear the nuisance, the guy that's calling, the person's calling every 2 weeks saying, you're probably not going to be invited back to be an investor if you do that.
No, you wouldn't be. If you're, you know, maybe if you're stroking a seven-figure check and the time, hey, I want to check in on XYZ, and you're still not a nuisance about it. But, you know, if you're taking the place of 20 other investors, okay, well, I can devote a little more time to you. But if you're a $50,000 investor and you're calling me every 2 weeks and wanting to dig into the books, I probably just won't invite you to the next deal. Sorry. I got a lot of other people that are lined up for that same spot that won't bring right. as much.
But I bet you appreciate the honest questions that you receive periodically from the ones you never hear anything from.
Right. Oh, for sure. For sure. 100%. Yeah. And welcome questions. I mean, I'm sure as well you do. I just was curious how, you know, some of the things that you've seen from, you know, your side of the table, what that has looked like. Yeah. So, you know, I'd like to use the balance, and we've been doing a great job here of really speaking to passive investors, you know, and what they can be doing. So you said, you know, focusing on teams that are operationally focused was one of the things that you'd said, you know, educating yourself, figuring out what you want, understanding the business risk, and then, you know, seeking out sponsors that you know, like, and trust. What are some other things that you would like to speak to on the passive investor, from passive investor angle?
Well, I think, you know, as I'd say, when I did my first deal almost 7.5 years ago, I really didn't know much of anything. I just knew and liked the person that was putting the deal together, and I had a little bit of knowledge and thought the business plan seemed good. But I really say that the more you, today when I actively invest, I have a couple different criteria I look at. This is me personally. Yours may be entirely different. But I first want to know, assuming I know the sponsor and assuming I know the submarket, you know, so if you send me a deal for Topeka, Kansas, no disrespect, if any of your audience is in Topeka, I'm probably not going to look at it.
Right.
I don't know anything about Topeka, but if it's in a Houston, if it's in a Texas market, I'm all in. I want to see it. But so assuming I know the sponsor, assuming I know the submarket, you know, kind of the other things I look at is what's the capital stack model? You'll see, you know, there's a lot of different plans out there. As you know, sponsors doing an 80-20, a 70-30 with, without a pref. I've seen them as high as a 50-50 split, which I don't really understand. But so I look at the capital stack and try to get my head around that. I still like to see deals, and it's getting to be tougher, where LPs have a voting right. Mm. There are a lot of them out there that don't give the LPs any voting rights at all anymore.
Right.
I really ask, what's the relationship between the GP and the property management company? Is this the first time you've ever worked together, or is this the 10th time? Has the property manager management company worked in this submarket and with this type of class of asset? You know, maybe they're new to Tampa, or maybe they're not. Maybe they've been in Tampa, but they're doing A properties and this is a C property. Just things you want to know as a passive investor. And that's assuming you've already got comfort with the deal sponsor and their history and all their communication styles are really big. We mentioned it's interesting when things go bad sometimes, or things aren't what they were, the business plan called for, how some sponsors go radio silent. So they're all businesses. So I've been in several where the first year the transition was difficult or whatever, but I, as an investor, like to hear, what's the forecast? So maybe that's because of my corporate world. So we're not where we want to be today, but what's the forecast to get back on track? Right. Is that going to be 6 months or never, or just kind of what's the sponsor's view there of the property? And one other one that I have high on my list these days is when you've done some of these, Sam, is what's the sponsor's history of getting the K-1 out? It's a simple one, but you know, when you've done these now, you find, as I said to one sponsor, I said, you've given me a lot of excuses, but not one good reason why the K-1 is 5 months late or 4 months late. That differentiates, in my mind, a best-in-class operator from an average person. Because yes, it takes a lot of coordination, but I still like to file my taxes in April. But the more I'm in this business, I realize everybody ends up filing an extension and files in October. But that's just me. That doesn't mean it has to be that way. I'll take the return, a good return, over an early K-1.
Smart man. That's an interesting metric, you know, that you put out there, and I like that. It's those little hacks that I think, you know, not until you've been in it for a while do you know to look for those.
Oh, and the other one in there, I'm sorry, every passive investor should look at, I've never had it happen to me, but what are the call rights? So in the event there is a capital call, what are the investors' rights, or what are their, you know, so some of them I've seen where if there's a capital call and you don't contribute, your capital account is wiped out. If there is a capital call and you don't contribute, you're just diluted. Right. But two different, and I'm never, thank goodness I'm knocking on wood here in Houston, never been in one where there's a capital call, but understand that risk as an LP. It shouldn't happen, but you want to be prepared.
You want to be prepared, and there's a reason that those provisions are in there. I mean, it's not in there just to be a pretty word on a page that we ignore. It's in there because it's a real possibility.
Right.
And I think that goes back to what you're talking about, is understanding, your second point was understanding the business risk.
And each property is different, whether it's a Houston property or a Tampa or a Cleveland, Ohio, A class, C class, B class. You've done enough of these. You just know there's a world of difference. And there is. And people should be able to relate to that from a single family perspective, right? There's good neighborhoods. It's equal correlation with single family markets.
Oh, for sure. And I liked how you pointed out the one of the questions to be asked is the relationship between not the GP and the property manager, but how many asset types has this property manager managed? Have they managed all A asset classes and they're moving into a C? Because that's a different tenant base. It's a different tenant base with a different communication style, with a different collection method, with a different, I mean, yeah, the money all may be green, but how it gets in the door is a... It's, you know, it's going to be a different program.
So I have a friend that's just sponsoring one, and he lives in Houston here, and he's sponsoring one in Athens, Georgia. I think it's Athens, Georgia. And his first time into Athens. So that's okay. And this is the experienced syndicator, but his first time with the property management company there. And I was happy to say he invested with, he partnered with a very prominent one there that has a ton of experience in this asset class and in this submarket.
Yeah.
Versus somebody that he's bringing in from Dallas or Houston to property management for him.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point. It's not even, because even if you have a track record with a particular property management company, dragging them halfway across the country into a new market, it may not be just wash, rinse, repeat that you're hoping for from the property management side.
Another sponsor I know from Dallas bought a Louisiana property, did just that. They brought their Dallas property management company to Louisiana, and it was a train wreck. Mm. Just because they didn't have that submarket experience. Great record in Dallas, but new to Louisiana market. So
that's fantastic. Randy, quickly, if you don't mind telling us, what does the trajectory of InvestArc properties look like? I know you, again, you've gone quite the opposite direction of most investors in that they are, you know, 4,000 GP, 250 LP. You want to flip that, but what's that look like in the next four to six years? And how do you plan on getting there?
So team building, joint venturing with other general partners or under other GPs, joint venturing and outsourcing. So outsourcing while I still work, people that are doing first pass of underwriting. So I've hired a University of Houston MBA real estate student. Hmm. And he's all in, and given him the tools and the template, taught him. He is now, so we're building velocity in underwriting. He does the first pass, saves two or three hours from us. And then we look at it and tweak it and make a go, no-go decision. but partnering with other people. I have some assets, but I'm not independently wealthy. And so it just makes it quicker and easier by partnering with people and always looking for more. Outsourcing, I've spent a lot of time in the COVID year of building infrastructure, a CRM in the back end, an investor portal, and developing some of the tools, trying to be real active on social media to build that thought knowledge platform. And so I would hope in the next 3 to 5 years that I don't really set a sight on a specific number of doors. Sam, I want to do one, and then I want to do one more, then I want to do one more, then I want to do one more. So I'm really just focused on developing that rinse and repeat. And so after you get one, as you know, in a market, building upon that, the first property I did was in Beaumont, Texas, about 150 miles due east of Texas, between here and St. Charles in Louisiana, 200,000 city. Most people don't like it. It's considered a secondary market. I'm scouring that market trying to find assets to buy just because it's not one of the big ones in Texas and not one where everybody's at. But I still think there's plenty of money to be made. So for me, it's about, the answer to your question is really about velocity and just volume of partners, volume of deal analysis, and underwriting solid deals and building the investor network.
That's fantastic. Randy, I've thoroughly enjoyed this. You've certainly given an incredible list of things that passive investors need to be really thinking about as they go and invest, and some really unique, I think, metrics by which to evaluate, you know, potential sponsors. So that's been a lot of fun. Let's jump here into the final four questions. First one is this. What now?
I said, uh-oh. Hard questions now.
Oh, the tough ones, man. No one ever gets through all four. First one is this. If I gave you just $20,000 to invest in real estate with no previous real estate investing experience, what would you do with it and why?
Well, I guess it'd go back to my business objective, but I would say, personally, I would stick it in a multifamily property. I'd find somebody to partner with and come up to meet the $50,000 minimum, or I would find a sponsor that a lot of times as people get closer to their deal raising and they may have a little tightness to let you in for less than the minimum. And I'd probably be a little more riskier with that than I would other money, perhaps, since I'd go for a deep value add deal and park it for 3 or 5 years and go with somebody that's got the track record and you're above average odds of doing very well.
That's awesome. Question number two, if you could help our listeners avoid one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
Avoid one mistake. I call it the speculation. So people say, I got $50,000 and I know Sam, I'm just going to throw $50,000 at his next project. Don't do that. Educate yourself. And even though Sam's a great guy and he's got a great track record, or Randy, back to that education, build your investment strategy. And there's a difference between a speculator and an investor.
Right. I like that. When it comes to investing in the world, it's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place.
One thing I think I do right is I really enjoy this. It's not work for me being a W-2 and still I do a lot of nights and weekends. One of the things I do well is persistence. I'll say persistence and education. I think no matter where you're at, I always want to invest passively and I always want to be looking for new deals to sponsor. So persistence, I would say.
That's awesome. I love that. Randy, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Sam, I've got a website out there. It's invest-arc, A-R-K, invest-arc.com. And on there's a contact page. I'd love to have you sign up for my newsletter, or if you want to talk about real estate, get on my investor list or anything real estate, you can schedule an appointment and would love to talk with you.
Randy, thank you so much. Do appreciate it.
Sam, it's been a pleasure. Thanks again.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.